All right, welcome back to this week's edition of the Rock and Roll Ghost Podcast. This week we have filmmaker Mark Pellington. He's directed a million videos, a bunch of film and TV stuff. Mark, it's a pleasure to have you today. I'm glad you were able to do this.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Thank you. So you don't, there's not anything currently you're promoting, right? Because you've got a, you had a couple of things that have come out, but they've been out for a little bit, correct?
Which ones are you speaking
like,
of?
Like the Severing came out last year, right?
The Severing has still not come out yet.
Oh, it had a release date of 21, sorry.
It played in Sundance, I mean, it played at Slam Dance, and we did a couple screenings, but it was just whatever. use that term loosely, by Kino Lorber. So we're still trying to arrange some screenings in New York to officially release it. And then it'll be, I think, early in the year, it'll go on their, you know, on their site, you know, kind of like the VOD site for them.
Okay. All right, cool. Yeah, I haven't obviously seen The Severing, but I've been seeing you post a lot about it. And the idea behind it, it sounds pretty cool. Can you kind of explain to the audience a little bit about what it's about?
Yeah, it's a dance film. And it uses, but it's kind of like, I describe it as, there was a dance film by Pina Bausch called Pina that Wim Wenders did. And I've always been into like movement and bodies. And this is very much more for like a horror crowd, very dark. And there's a choreographer named Nina McNeely, who worked with Gaspar Noé on his film Climax. And I asked her to help me do some imagery for a music video, and we ended up taking all that footage and made a movie out of it. So it's it's a narrative, but all told through bodies. There's no plot. So it's an experimental, very dark, beautiful dance film that, you know, ultimately people are interested in kind of that weird experience. It's not ballet at all. It's pretty fucked up. So I can send you the trailer, the teaser trailer, which you're more than welcome to share to your, you know, that's online. And you give your audience a taste of it if you share video stuff.
Yeah, on the site, sure, I can include that as the embed, just like the interview itself. So that'd be great.
Another thing that's coming out soon is a feature version of a film that I made for Quibi called Survive, which was a survival film with Sophie Turner from Game of Thrones and Corey Hawkins from various films. And that was, you know, Quibi was that app that kind of just disintegrated, but we ended up making a feature version out of that, which is now like available in 25 countries, and a company called Freestyle is going to release here, I think very shortly, in the States. They're a little tiny distributor. I think the mental health and suicide issues of the film prevented a lot of larger streamers from taking it.
Yeah.
So that's coming out. And then the most exciting is that I'm re-releasing a director's edit of my first film called Going All the Way with Ben Affleck, Rachel Weisz, Rose McGowan, Jeremy Davies. That came out in 1997. Mm-hmm. It was a Gramercy release, was played at Sundance. It came out in 97. And Oscilloscope Labs has... we've restored, done a new 4K director's edit with an hour of new footage, new score, new titles, new voiceover, a brand new version of the movie. So I'm super excited about that. 25 years later, really getting a chance to kind of make the version I always wanted to make.
Yeah, you know, I've been seeing you post about that, and I had to admit, it's not one I had heard of, even though I've always intensely followed, you know, releases. I don't know what kind of release Going All the Way got, but the first film of yours I saw was Arlington Road.
Going All the Way got a decent, like, in art at the time. Remember, 1997 was a totally different time, and it got a decent, you know, it got a decent release by Gramercy Pictures. Gramercy was released, Gramercy was owned by PolyGram, and so when PolyGram folded, everything just went into limbo. Going All the Way never got a proper ancillary release. There was a DVD that disappeared, and then it never went to cable, or, you know, it was never available. Mm-hmm. So Lakeshore was the company that made Arlington Road and Mothman and Henry Poole and stuff like that. They sold their library to a company that I was working with, and I said, guys, you've got an unreleased Ben Affleck movie that in your library, you should re-release it, as opposed to just some, you know, HD version sitting in some warehouse somewhere. So I was able to convince them to re-release it.
That's cool. And when could we expect that to come out?
I think in November.
All right, awesome.
They're doing a theatrical release, like 10 cities, and then a Blu-ray, and then it'll be out there in the world. The Blu-ray's got a plethora of it's great. I mean, it's literally a great new version of the movie.
Yeah, and that's early on with Rachel and Ben before they, I mean, that's before Ben was in Armageddon, so that's...
Yeah, Nick Offerman is in it. It's his first movie. It's really interesting.
Yeah, I'm eager to check it out then, especially considering how you were able to get back in there and do it the way you originally wanted.
Yeah. I mean, it took a year. A lot of work. Yeah. No money, but a lot of work, but a lot of freedom.
Yeah, well, how many directors get the chance to do that, huh?
Well, yeah, I mean, like, just think about your first podcast. How long ago was that?
3 years.
Okay, so now do this for 25 years, right?
Yeah.
And then get a chance to go back and redo everything.
Yeah. Well, my first interview, I mean, hell, my first interview was back in high school, but my first professional was in the early 2000s, and I was really bad at it. I mean, I'm not saying I'm great at it now, but I was, like, really so green to doing it that my confidence wasn't there yet.
There you go.
Yeah.
Exactly what it is.
Well, I was watching some of Survive on Roku because they absorbed all the Quibi stuff. And I really thought visually, number one, it was really interesting. You took a lot of really kind of simple, like old school practical effects. It seemed like a lot of in-camera stuff, a lot of stuff with lighting. And you do a lot of interesting things, like when Sophie and Corey are on the plane and you can't hear them actually talking to each other, but you can get the feeling that for once she might be a little bit happy. And I didn't get very far past the crash, so.
You were that bored by it?
No. I have had a busy last month, so I'm coming back to it. But I was able to, I got about 4 or 5 episodes, you know, out of the 5 minutes.
So you were watching it as episodes. Is that on Roku still as 10-minute episodes?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, because they don't have the movie.
Right. So sorry, go ahead.
No, that whole thing was a fucking just.
I remember when Quibi came out, I was very, very suspect of it, but I thought it might be cool. And then it pretty much disappeared as soon as it showed up.
You know, it was an experience. You know, I'm really happy with the feature version of it.
Right. You
know, wait till you can see the whole thing and watch the whole thing. Okay. It's good. You know what?
Yeah.
It's a better movie than The Mountains Between Us, which they say, oh, it's about a Caucasian woman and an African-American guy stuck on a mountain and having to survive. I mean, okay. It's a lot more interesting than that film, put it that way.
Yeah. Well, I've gotten that so far. So yours is the film version like just an expanded version, or is it basically all of it tied together?
It's it tied together with other scenes that didn't make it in the Quibi version, and it just and stretched out more for a big screen, like stuff that let's say you do a helicopter shot or a drone shot or an aerial shot that again on a phone is good in 4 seconds, but you can go to 7-8 seconds on a big screen. It could breathe. It just breathed a lot more. And, you know, they were very arrogant at the time. We're making it for them on the phone. I said, wait, you guys aren't going to be able to let people watch this on their computer or their TV. And they're like, nope. I'm like, okay. Look, at the end of the day, it was a job. They're like, hey, do you want to do this movie? People were doing stuff for Quibi. You know, it was considered kind of like, oh, if you can get a Quibi thing, great.
Yeah.
Be in business with them. It was in Europe and it was short. It was like, go, you'll be done the whole thing in 5 months, which was good, as opposed to like a year. I liked the script. Got to work with good young actors and, you know, but at the time, after I had made Nostalgia, which was a sad drama, I needed a good genre movie to kind of get back in that world. And unfortunately, nobody ever saw it. So,
yeah.
And then the COVID hit.
Yeah. It's been
a tough few years.
Well, the interesting thing with Quibi is that it could have, in essence, the idea was interesting. It just didn't catch. That's the biggest thing.
I think the timing was really bad with COVID. You know, you're making something for like mobile apps that were, and it that kind of, I have nothing bad to say about Jeffrey Katzenberg or the people there. You know, they were very cool. I just think it was like, maybe it was an interesting idea, but at the wrong time.
Yeah.
Again, people want to be able to watch something on their computer. That's fine. You make something for phones. And I mean, it wasn't revolutionary, you know. Yeah. People have been trying to make this short. People have been doing short form stuff, little pieces. Nobody at the volume and the, with as much money to dole out as they did. But, you know, if people can't watch on their TV, they're like, what are you, crazy? What I mean?
Yeah. I noticed, it's been so long since I've watched it, but you directed an episode of one of my favorite TV shows. I guess I had forgotten that you did it. You worked on Homicide: Life on the Street. That was pretty early on.
I did. I did the opening titles for Barry Levinson, who I knew from Baltimore.
Yeah.
God, I did those in 91.
That sounds about right.
And then right after Going All the Way in 97, they asked me to do 96. They asked me to do an episode.
Yeah.
And that was my first exposure to broadcast television, you know, make your shooting days. It was fun.
Yeah. Yeah, that was an exceptionally good show. It just
great show.
It was ahead of its time.
But it ran a long time.
Yeah,
long time.
Yeah, a show like that nowadays, when the networks, when there wouldn't be a savior holding that show on.
I mean, it just kind of got watered down into the Dick Wolf of it all. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, cases, an A story, a B story, ensemble, cops, you know, I mean, I think the way they did it at the time.
Oh, it was fresh.
The way they shot it, you know, and that's Barry and Tom Fontana, and the way that it was approached, the authenticity of it, bringing that doc style in 1991 was what was radical about it.
Yeah, yeah. And David got to kind of refine that whole thing with The Wire anyway, so.
Which is a great, great
show. Oh, for sure. I saw something that you might be developing Arlington Road into a series. What's the story with that?
We've been trying. We've been kind of striking out there.
It would seem kind of ripe considering the times, not quite honestly.
That's what you would think, but it's not that easy.
Yeah.
Television is a long, turgid slog. developing it, you know, it takes a long time, and studios come and go, and all these kind of corporate omelets of people buying up these, you know, like algorithmic mergers of who owns what and who's in charge now. It, you know, look, that's a, I don't care how you slice the TV version of it, which is really good. The creator did a great job in contemporizing it, but it's just, we live in a very safe time. There's risk. I mean, I don't know what's risk taking. The very fact you want to get into anything political kind of about our own fear and paranoia in modern day politics, just, I'm shocked that it wasn't able to sell yet. They're still
trying. Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, because I mean, it, people don't remember, but around the time, or people may not know, but around the time Arlington Road came out was the whole thing with the Oklahoma bombing and Ruby Ridge and all that stuff was kind of, that was the beginning of what we're seeing now in a lot of ways, I think. And, you know, to have a modern spin where that all of that has kind of gone out of control to some degree, you know, even though nothing, I guess, well, it's hard to tell. Like January 6th was pretty bad, but the Oklahoma City bombing, as far as an American terrorist thing, was pretty huge. I think that's one that kind of history hasn't necessarily forgotten, but I think most younger people don't really have a sense about, because 9/11 became such a big deal.
But January 6th was just way, way more dangerous in terms of the implications of the downfall of democracy.
Right, so right, absolutely.
The world has just gotten to the point where if we're questioning whether democracy can survive and the two-party system can survive, the divisiveness in this country is just like fucking through the roof.
Oh, for sure. And it's worse
it's way worse. And the fact that we know more about it and everything's just exposed, it's, I don't know. It's, I mean, look, all it means is gun violence has supplanted terrorism as the hot button topic. Right. If you were making Arlington Road now, it wouldn't be about, you know, a bombing, right? It would be about a school shooting, right? Like the way that Arlington Road originally took its cue from the parallax view when assassination was the hot button topic in the 70s. Then in the 90s, it was domestic terrorism and Ruby Ridge and these Oklahoma City. And then Columbine happens, and it's like all about that and our vulnerability. Then 9/11, and I mean, it's just, I don't know.
I mean, if you think back to our American history is riddled with horrors and everything. Do you think we're at any worse point now in America than we ever were, or is it business as usual, just a different, you know, different face of it?
I'm 60 years old. I grew up during Watergate, right?
Yeah. So
Watergate was my Like, I remember Vietnam, right? I remember it being on the news and Watergate. I mean, I think this country is so fucked up. It's beyond, I don't know. I think there's decent human beings and just change. Yeah. But I think it's just disintegrating.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think to kind of get anywhere, we would need a radical reset of getting back to what the spirit maybe to some degree of what the country was founded on, not necessarily the actual ideals.
I don't know how that's possible.
No, it's not. We're too entrenched.
I think the technology and the algorithms and technology have just manipulated people so much that there's no free will anymore. We're all just getting churned up into this huge, numbers crunching world where all people give a shit about is numbers and money.
Yeah. All right. You made a lot of videos. I know you worked with the Foo Fighters. Were you close with any of those guys?
Yeah. I knew.
How was the loss of Taylor for you?
I did not know him that well. I mean, it was terrible. It's a terrible loss for his family.
Yeah.
I didn't know him well enough to feel, Dave's the one who I was more connected with, and he's a great guy, and they're a great family. They're a great bunch of guys, and that's a tragedy.
Yeah. Is there anything you're working on now besides what you talked about? You talked about Survive being a full length film and
that's done. The Severing's out and they're trying to get that going all the way is coming out. I'm working on a documentary about a TV show that I made years ago for MTV called Buzz, which is a radical kind of magazine show that I did in 1990. I had a creative partner named John Klein, and we made that. So I'm working on that doc. I've spent kind of COVID and post-COVID working on those things and trying to get any number of movies financed and cast and, but my taste is not streaming plus. It's more esoteric or darker, and art house theaters have disappeared, and it's harder and harder to get original movies made.
Yeah. Which seems strange because of all the sheer amount of things out there for places to be, that but you could tell, like with the Lord of the Rings thing, that streamers are starting to and Sandman and stuff like that, they're starting to go for that big bucks thing, and they're leaving behind the small model.
That's all they've done. I think if you do any of that fantasy comic book superhero stuff, you're gold. That's never been my jam. I've never done that. Never been, never really been asked to do it. Whatever. I just, times have changed.
Yeah.
New voices are desired. I'm glad I'm the age that I am and had the career that I've had. There's still a bunch of movies and things I'd like to make, but I'm as interested in like teaching or doing a theater piece or publishing a book or, just there's other ways to be creative where that they don't require you to like just beg actors to read your scripts. It just gets grueling,
Yeah. Yeah. I can understand that. Well, what personally are you reading or watching these days that you can turn people on to?
I'm reading a book. I'm always reading several books. I'm reading a book called How to Do Nothing by Jenny O'Dell, which is a great book about resisting the attention economy. I'm reading the David Milch memoir. I'm reading a book about the making of the old film Ryan's Daughter.
Okay.
reading about the Bull Durham, The Making of Bull Durham, Ron Shelton's book.
Oh, I got to get that.
Yep, that's great. So I tend to just rotate, you know, a lot of nonfiction usually. I don't watch. I did start watching Reboot on Hulu, which is fun.
Yeah.
I like shows that are meta about things. I go to the movies all the time. I enjoyed Emily the Criminal with Aubrey Plaza. I enjoyed John Boyega in Breaking, both which are now out in the, you know, iTunes world. I saw a great foreign film called Hold Me Tight with Vicky Creeps.
Okay.
That's brilliant. So I like to go to the theater. I like to go to the theaters and see movies.
Yeah.
Harder as that's getting in LA with them shutting down more and more.
Yeah.
I wonder if within 5 years movie theaters are going to exist anymore.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know if I could be that pessimistic about it. I don't know. I don't know where it's going to go. I think there is a certain, I don't know. We need to get out of this kind of COVID area number one, you know, to kind of see where, how films can sustain. But honestly, right now, the interesting thing I found is that multiplexes near me keep movies longer than they had before, because there's, right now, there's not a ton of stuff. And they're also presenting a little bit outside of Chicago.
So are there still the same amount of theaters in outside of Chicago?
Nothing's really, the only thing that closed was that, what was that big, the one that had a lot of theaters in LA that closed during the pandemic?
The Arclight.
Yeah, they closed, but they only had a couple of places here, and I think AMC snatched them up. So I don't think anything's actually closed out here yet. In fact, I live near the Indiana border, and there's a town near me where they have literally two multiplexes a mile away from each other.
Yeah, and what are they playing?
Well, they're playing pretty much everything. They're sometimes playing Hindi films. They're playing some class. The programming has gotten really interesting, actually. They're like, I think somebody's showing Pan's Labyrinth for the next week or so. There's a lot of, I mean, I got to give theater owners, you know, credit, at least out here. They're trying to do something a little bit different here and there.
Good.
You know?
Good for them.
Yeah, and I know in LA you guys got a lot of choices, so.
A lot of them have shut down.
Yeah. I'm surprised in LA that's been a problem. I would expect
people don't go to the movies.
Yeah.
People weird. Don't go. COVID, like, they haven't started going back. Like, for everyone that went to Top Gun, I go see Emily the Criminal, and there's 8 people on a Friday night.
Yeah.
A great movie. Like, normally you would have had, at the Arclight, there would have been 3/4 filled.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Hopefully, I can't imagine a world without movie theaters. That's all I can say.
No. They shut down CBGBs, they can shut down movie theaters. Yeah. The more money, the less people go. I'm trying, maybe it's not 5 years, but like, just when people just want to, like, it's too easy. I'll just watch it at home.
Yeah. Well, the window closing for release on the streamers is a bit ridiculous. I mean,
all those movies I mentioned, a week later, you could go, you know, rent them for $18.
Yeah.
iTunes, yeah. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely a weird time, but I hope we can see a resurgence, but maybe I'm just being naive. I don't know.
They're not going to start making like mid-sized thrillers anymore. You can't change the technology back.
Yeah.
You know, once these movies, they say, okay, we're going to release them in theaters and day and date, right? The numbers just prove people want to stay at home. Yeah. They want to stay at home and they want to get Postmates. I mean, it's ease. Why would I get in my car and go spend and take three kids to the movies, right? And spend $65 in park when I could just buy it at home.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Economically.
Yeah, no, everything's gotten to a price point to kind of change things, and then they don't help themselves by, you know, marketing a different way that cuts out the movie theater itself.
It's all about money. It's just all about money. That's all.
Yeah.
So you'll have this small group of Oscar movies, and Oscar season will go from September to March, and then I'm not being cynical. I'm in the middle of it every day.
Yeah. And
so you got to either be like, all right, you know, you can't just change your tastes. You can't be like, all right, and nobody's asking me to do Marvel 3. That's fine. Right. So you just got to learn how to make movies cheaper.
Yeah.
The cheaper you can make them, the more odds are that you can get something made. That's all I care about.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, Mark, I really appreciate you taking the time today. We've gone a little bit over what I had asked.
My pleasure.
But I really hope you, number one, I hope everything continues going well for you. Good luck with, all the upcoming projects and the Severin getting released, and looking forward to seeing Survive as a full length. And I keep blanking on the other one?
Going all the way.
Okay, then that's going to come out on in
middle November, of November.
So, middle of November. Great. Well, Mark, I really appreciate you taking the time today. I hope you have a great rest.
See you later. Thanks.
Take care. Bye.